Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is all of it. If you're inspired to make a meal from one of the recipes in Dione Kachilis' book or TV show My Greek Table, here's another way to keep your stay-at-home trip to Greece going: by tuning into the movie The Trip to Greece. The fourth and final installment of The Trip series stars travel buddies and competitive impressionists Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon playing over-the-top versions of themselves. Coogan's character is an actor who likes to remind you how many BAFTAs he's won, and he's a pretty well-read bloviator. Brydon, a Welsh actor and comedian, plays what Coogan's character calls a popular light entertainer. He emphasizes the light part. Their previous trips have taken them to northern England, Spain, and Italy, but in this one, they're following the route of the Odyssey, just a lot more comfortably. They stay in fancy hotels, they rent cars, visit landmarks, take ferry tours to the shores of Greece, but most of the time, they're at these beautiful restaurants, eating the most delicious-looking food and having conversations like this.
If you think about Heracles, he was someone...
Heracles? Don't you mean Hercules?
If you're using the Roman name, then yes, that would be Hercules.
I only know him from the film.
Okay, well, Heracles is the Greek name for him. He murdered his wife and children.
You know, Schwarzenegger played him in the movie.
Okay, the labors of Hercules, if you like.
Hercules in New York.
One of his first movies. Thank you. From a Christian perspective, is basically him serving his penance. Can't even imagine Christianity forgiving a man for murdering his wife and children.
Well, you're quite right, too.
Mr. Coogan,
are you suggesting that the man standing before us today who murdered his wife and children should be forgiven?
Hercules Arnold played him in Hercules in New York.
Hercules in New York.
It was one of my first films.
You sound a bit like Werner Herzog there.
That's right, I was doing Werner.
I was one of my first films. It was very hard to do. I had to get Arnold Schwarzenegger to do it for me.
My name is Giorgio. Everybody calls me George.
And it goes on like that. The Trip to Greece will be available in digital form from IFC Films on May 22nd. Michael Winterbottom, the series director, joins me now to discuss it. Michael, welcome.
Hello.
So each trip is 6 meals, 6 days. We know the beats if you love the series. In the first trip, how did you land on that structure? And why did you decide to stick with it?
I think it was pot luck on the first series. I'm from the north of England and Steve is. So I kind of thought for me it was like an excuse to go around the north of England and eat lots of great restaurants and have lots of trips before we did the filming. And in the story, it's the same idea really. In the story, Steve's was supposed to be going with his girlfriend, but unfortunately his girlfriend dumps him, so he goes with Rob Brydon. And it just seemed, it just seemed like a simple structure. Yeah, I think lunch, meals out at restaurants, they're very social occasions. So it's a kind of place where we all sit down and talk about whatever we want to. It's a kind of place where your mind can wander, the conversation wanders, and you expect to be there for a couple of hours having a good time. And it felt like that would be a good starting point for the film.
In a pre-interview, Steve Coogan shared that when he first watched the first trip, he thought maybe it was a little bit slow. But that's become part of what people enjoy about these films. Why do you think the pacing of these films works for audiences or is interesting to audiences?
I don't know. The structure, like you said, is around the 6 meals. It's also a kind of road movie as well. So in this case, we start in Troy, where Odysseus was leaving Troy to... after being there for 10 years fighting, and we end in Ithaca, which is his home place. And so it's a very simple structure, and they wander around, they make the route meanders, and Steve and Rob meander, and hopefully it's occasionally funny and interesting.
So let's talk about that meandering. How much of that is scripted and how much is improvised?
We have about a 60-page outline, so like the basic shape is in the structure. And then, I heard you mention that Steve's quite well read. Well, that is also in the structure. Really. We provide a reasonable amount of background notes so that Steve and Rob can sound like they've read the Odyssey, or they can sound like they've read the Iliad, but without necessarily putting in the hours.
So, it's interesting. What aspects of Coogan and Brydon are the most fun to exaggerate in these characters for you as a director?
Well, the starting point for the whole idea was that having had lunch with Steve and Rob on several occasions, trying to think of things to do, that they're just really entertaining. You know, they're they're roughly the same age, pretty much exactly the same age. They have very similar kind of areas of interest. You know, they have a huge knowledge of popular culture, but they have very different views of the world. And I think that's probably what we exaggerate slightly. The kind of that Steve is someone who's ambitious, who wants to do interesting things, he wants to challenge people, he wants to go on adventures. You know, in our story, sort of, he left his wife and child 20 years ago, just like Odysseus in the Odyssey. And he's ambitious, you know, and restless. Mm-hmm. And Rob is very domestic. He's very happy to be the light entertainer that Steve describes him as. He doesn't have any great ambitions. We exaggerate that. But there's definitely a kernel of truth. That's how they are really. But we push that and exaggerate that. But the rivalry between them, the sort of rivalry between who can do the best impression, or the rivalry between who's right about things, who's wrong. I mean, that's fairly genuine. I wouldn't say that's particularly exaggerated. They are like that.
Well, since you're talking about impressions, I mean, that's sort of a really big hallmark of the series, which they, impersonate a celebrity and then they tell each other what the other one's doing wrong. Let's take a listen to one from the first series about how to do an appropriate Michael Caine.
I've not heard your Michael Caine, but I assume it would be something along the lines of, "My name's Michael Caine."
That is where you are so wrong. And you can look at my live video for proof, because that's the very thing I don't do.
Do you, Michael Caine?
Okay. I say, "Michael Caine used to talk like this in the 1960s, right? But that has changed." And I say that over the years, Michael's voice has come down several octaves. Let me finish. "And all of the cigars and the brandy, don't let me finish, can now be heard."
Okay.
I've not finished. In the back of the voice, and the voice now. Well, I've still not finished the voice.
Well, you're panicking.
Because you look like you're about to bloody talk. Let me finish. Right, so, Michael Caine's voice now in the Batman movies and in Harry Brown. I can't go fast because Michael Caine talks very, very slowly.
Right, this is how Michael Caine speaks. Michael Caine speaks to his nose like that. He gets very, very specific. It's very like that. When he gets loudly, it gets very loud indeed. It gets very specific. It's not quite nasal enough the way you're doing it, all right? You're not doing it the way he speaks. You're not doing it with the kind of... And you don't do the broken voice when he gets very emotional. When he gets very emotional indeed. She was only 16 years old. She was only 16. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. That's Michael Caine.
So, Rob, excuse me, Michael, as a director, that went on for about a minute and a half. How much of that was there originally or something like that? I mean, do you keep shooting and just let them keep going and then you and the editor wrestle it to the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we filmed for about a month, so each meal we do a couple of days on each meal. So, but really, when we're filming, like when you stop filming and the meal's over, or they stop driving, you get out of the car, they carry on the same, really. So for a whole month, you have that. So we have a lot of material, and then we try and shape it into something. You think it's slow watching it. It's even slower when you're there.
My guess is Michael Winterbottom. We're talking about The Trip to Greece, which is available from IFC starting on May 22nd. In between the meals, there are these very personal scenes where the men are alone in hotel rooms and they call their families. And at one point, one of them learns that the wife is at the theater from the daughter and he's not so sure he's happy about that. When you're balancing those intimate, really sweet scenes with these sort of broader ones, what are the conversations with the actors like?
Well, it's all very simple, to be honest. I mean, I think on the first series, there were one or two times when Rob was a little bit worried about the borderline between fiction and fact. You know, on the first series, he makes a sort of half pass, or the first film, he makes a half pass at Steve's assistant, and he was extremely reluctant to do it. He basically almost refused to do it. He felt people would think he was somehow being unfaithful to his wife if he was on film doing this. So I think initially they were both perhaps a little concerned about where the borderline between fiction and their own personal lives lies. But now, obviously, having done it a few times, that's kind of become, I think they've become more relaxed in that. And really, like in this case, the main sort of personal family storyline in this film is that there's always been in each film, there's the son, Steve's son has been sort of appeared. And the idea is that Steve hasn't really lived with his son since the son was a baby, so 20 years, 20, 21 years. So there's a sort of echo between that and Odysseus' son looking for him, because in the Odyssey, Odysseus' son, it sort of cross-cuts between Odysseus trying to get home and his son trying to find him and bring him home. And so there's a kind of, that is the sort of main sort of personal storyline in this. But really, it's all very simple to shoot. And so there's nothing complicated about the conversations that go on set. Everyone sort of knows pretty much what they're doing.
So it's, Steve Coogan was actually on the show back in 2018, came to the New York studio when he was playing Stan Laurel in the movie Stan and Ollie. And that's one of the things that comes up in the conversation in this film about how Laurel and Hardy and these two comedians, whose names were only ever said together, and they were not actually very close at first. It was only after they first started touring they began to see each other as full human beings. And in this film, Steve Coogan is talking about all of his awards he's being nominated for. But let's listen to what Steve said about the relationship to Laurel and Hardy, and then I'll ask you about something on the other side.
That period was a way of exploring the friendship that comes with working intensively with someone. And I think at the end of their lives, when people had, or towards the end of their lives, when the various professional people had come and gone, and the people in the personal lives had come and gone, they realized the only person left in the room was the other guy. And that was the point they started to really appreciate what they brought to each other's lives.
What have you seen change over the course of Rob and Steve's relationship?
I think the starting point, you know, the idea was in the starting film that they were brought together slightly accidentally because Steve's girlfriend had dropped out, and there was much more of a kind of rivalry. Now that rivalry and the sort of antagonism in a way between the two worldviews, the sort of that rivalry was partly fictional. We pushed that in a fictional way to try and make it fairly combative because we thought that combat would be entertaining, you know, that would be funny. But I guess over the kind of doing the sort of four films over 10 years, it's like that has softened a bit, you know, and they are become closer. They are more relaxed with each other. They understand each other's position more. So they have grown closer together. You know, maybe that's a good reason for finishing, really, you know, because just having two people who love each other endlessly on screen is perhaps not the most entertaining thing to have. So, I think it has softened, both in within the fictional world of the film and also, you know, in the experience of making it. You know, I think we have a very small crew that makes this with Steve and Rob. And, you know, we've pretty much been the same people each time. And I think for everyone, this experience of working in Greece was the most enjoyable. It was fun. It was, like, very relaxed. You know, I think that, you know, I hope that in a way that's in the film. But, yeah, I guess that's the biggest change. They've got a little bit closer, a little bit warmer to each other.
The name of this film is The Trip to Greece. Michael Winterbottom is its director. Michael, thank you for making time for us today.
Thank you.